So what I like to do in law is I go back to the maxims. So go back to the Latin root of the word. If you go into your Maxims of Equity book and you look up, the root of the word is inclusio. Inclusio says the inclusion of one is the exclusion of everything else.
Oh, that's excellent.
So
Wow.
inclusion is an inversion. So the social justice warriors are telling you, we need inclusion. No. They're saying we need exclusion,
Right.
right? It's an exclusive club being a social justice warrior. It's an exclusive club being an environmentalist or a feminist. Because if you're not on board with their ideology, you're not in the club.
Everyone, it's Tim Pichot with the Liberty Advisor, and upcoming, we have a show I'm very proud of. When it comes to being off-grid and growing your own food and raising chickens, there's not too many more people prolific in the game than Off-Grid with Curtis Stone. But wait, there's more. At the onset of the pandemic, I was asked by Luke Radowski who I thought was the best prepper, off-grid survivalist person that I know, and I told him that was Jay Noon. Jay's a prominent member of the Free State Project in New Hampshire. He also runs Man Camp and Gun Church. Just all around great dude that would give you the shirt off his back if he could. And he was presenting at Anarchapoco, basically how to not F up your kids. It's my great honor to be able to sit down with both of these gentlemen at Anarchapoco, where you can still go to anarchapoco.com, where you can not only get their speeches, but all the other great speeches from all the great presenters who were there. And even if you just walk away with just one nugget of information, that can help pay for the cost of this many, many times over. I was speaking at the TDV Investment Summit, where you can also purchase that at anarchapoco.com for all the replays. And seriously, just one piece of information can make all of it worth it. And the last thing I'll be plugging is if you head over to the libertyadvisorshow.com, again, that's the libertyadvisorshow.com, you can sign up for my email list. And within the next month, I'll be launching a free Great Reset Retirement Blueprint Masterclass, which will be a live webinar that will be only available to my subscribers. I also have a course in the works on how to use charitable trusts and foundations to legally avoid crypto gains, and another course on how basically everything you need to know about crypto that I filmed a couple of years ago and never ended up putting this out. This is where you're going to have, different modules and different courses within the modules. Again, all for free, something that could easily be charging hundreds of dollars for, but you can get that by subscribing at the libertyadvisorshow.com. Now, I hope you enjoy this absolute banger of an episode where Curtis and Jay go deep on the law and other tricks the Matrix uses to help enslave our minds. And this episode, I can't recommend enough. Enjoy. Everyone, we are very excited to have Curtis Stone, Off Grid with Curtis Stone, and we've got my buddy Jay Noon, who we've known for a long time. And both of these guys are probably some of the best preppers you're going to find anywhere. And so, as we're going into this crazy environment, really, not as we're going in, we've been in this crazy environment probably our entire lives, but certainly in the last 4 years, I can't think of two better people to really help navigate everything that's going on. But first, what I really wanted to get into really was kind of just discussing some of the best ways to help prepare. And so it's not only preparing, because I'm sure a lot with a lot of Curtis's videos, a lot of stuff is going to be really geared towards, things you can physically do on your land, getting prepared. A lot of things I talk about has to do with money issues, but now I'm going into this Truth to Freedom channel because there is so much more than just the money component. Because, fine, great, your money goes 10x's, but what does it really matter if you end up starving to death? And another component of this as well is really coming at this really from a spiritual component. So I was wanting to see if Curtis, maybe these are one of the topics you don't really talk as much about, so I think it would be nice to kind of really kind of open into this. But really, what kind of got you down like the spiritual path that you've kind of started going down?
Well, I'll tell you what really accelerated, because I think it's been such a long journey that it would be a really hard and long explanation. But the thing that accelerated it was my exploration into the law and the legal system. And when I saw how the New World Order is so fixated on turning you away from God and everything that's natural, that's what brought me closer was, because I used to call myself an atheist. I'm certainly the furthest thing from that now, but I used to call myself an atheist for many years. I was a progressive liberal. I lived in Montreal. I was a hipster musician, and I had that as a vegan, a vegetarian, raw vegan for many years. 13 years vegetarian, raw vegan for 3 years. And had a lot of opinions that as soon as I started farming changed, but also when I started to find freedom, because every farmer comes up against the government. And so I was faced with battles right out of the gate in my farming enterprise that I'm condensing a lot of stuff, but that what got me on a spiritual path was seeing in law how they always want to get you away from the land, get you away from what's natural, get you away from anything spiritually connected and grounded, right? They want you injected, blast with electric magnetic frequencies. They want you thinking that the law and the legal system is this big thing you'll never understand and you need a lawyer to even navigate it. When I saw that stuff and then started to implement some of my knowledge by writing paperwork and writing letters and getting results, I realized then this is the power is all here, and that's quite empowering. And so it was kind of like a red pill after many red pills. I got red pilled 24 years ago with my dad, told me about the Federal Reserve on when he was driving me when I was 19, 20 years old to college. He explained how the banking system worked to me, and that was really the beginning. And then 9/11 happened shortly after that.
Oh wow.
And then I knew about that right away. And yeah, had a journey, a many year journey, but in that journey, always seeking solutions and remedy. I did spend a lot of time down the rabbit hole, as a lot of people do, but I found farming really brought me deeper into the law because I got so fucking pissed off about the way farmers are in every part of the world, because I've consulted for farmers all over the world in dozens of different countries, and it's the same thing everywhere. They want to get you off the land. If they're farming, they want you compartmentalized, commercialized, commodified, right? That's how they want you. And so they don't want you learning indigenous knowledge. They don't want you understanding the secrets of the plant medicines that we have. They don't want you in any of that stuff. So it was almost by understanding the devil which brought me closer to God.
And that's really fascinating, because I think I was in a similar type path growing up in a very Catholic family, and always realizing, having a very bad sort of gut feeling about that. And I didn't want to get confirmed, and my dad's basically like, hey, you either get confirmed or you're getting kicked out of the house. And I got kicked out of the house anyways, and then, you know, left that, and then got into a pretty dark place, you know, having mom left at an early age, dad kicking me out, and really at that point, you know, in this dark spot. And then, like yourself, the first thing I woke up to, but much, much later, was the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
And I was actually on a class that won the national competition on the Federal Reserve in college against Harvard, Yale, MIT. And then as soon as I graduate, this guy that looks like Rob Zombie is telling me that that the Federal Reserve is private, and he was like a painter, and I'm like, yeah, there's no way. I have a Series 7 stockbroker's license. I took the class that won the national competition. You're full of crap.
And yeah, you then all.
And then it brought me to the movie Freedom to Fascism, the
yes.
Creature from Jekyll Island.
Yes.
And that was the very first book that I read. And actually, it's kind of funny because my ex-wife actually knows his former girlfriend, where they're best friends, and we actually never met each other until after all this. So it's kind of this crazy story. But she wanted to shut me up, so she went to Borders Bookstore, and she just happened to buy me the book Creature from Jekyll Island. And not only did that not shut me up, that's what energized everything, because I'm like, if I was in the catbird seat of having all this different knowledge of going through the indoctrination system and I didn't know it, you know, who else doesn't know this? And so it really lit a fire underneath me. And then by really seeing, I guess, the devil inside of things and seeing what the, you know, elite are really into,
yes,
that's what then got me to realize, okay, well, there's got to be a God or a creator. And then I really then didn't really even do too much with that. And then the first time I ever spoke out and gave a speech, somebody's like, oh, it's like maybe 2010. Someone's like, oh, it sounds like you just ripped off the Book of Revelations. I'm like, what's that?
Yeah.
I've never read the Book of Revelations.
It's amazing how you'll find your way to those books in the Bible or those stories in the Bible by experience and coming to realizations.
And I'm like, oh, wow, I got into the same fight that Yeshua or Jesus got into,
sure,
like against the money changers and against
sure.
the temple.
Sure.
And so, you know, by having that good heart. And so, and people like, you know, Alex Jones, I think, helped wake me up to, I guess, like the God component of all this. And you know, and it really helps, you know, kind of going into the pandemic and you know, so how are things in your area of Canada, or people that are around you with the pandemic and,
Fine. Yeah. I manifested my reality with my wife and children. We got out of the city. I had a lovely home, a beautiful urban homestead that we're in, you know, maybe 1,000 of my YouTube videos. I didn't really want to leave, but I always wanted, like, I got into urban farming, 15 years ago now, But I always wanted to be on broad acre doing regenerative agriculture. That's what I always wanted to do, but it wasn't in the cards for me. I couldn't buy the land. I didn't have the financial equity to do it. So I got into urban farming. But when the scamdemic happened, we always wanted to move and the stars aligned. I had been looking for property for years. I look at real estate actively. Now I run a program that gets people on the land and finds property listings for them. What we do all over the United States called the Homestead Accelerator. I was doing that. I have a system in which I evaluate land. I was applying that system, probably visited during the scamdemic 20 places around BC. I was looking kind of all over BC, maybe as far as Kamloops, British Columbia, not near the coast, but interior southern. And I found a place that nobody else wanted because it didn't have a secured water source and it didn't have good access and it was off grid. I wanted all of those things. And I also said, I wasn't challenged by any of them because I understand land. I understand where water moves. I understand soil. I understand the flora and fauna of the climate I'm in. So I bought a piece of land that was extraordinarily undervalued. It was a quarter of the price that everything else was at that time. And I went in there and accomplished what I wanted to do anyways. And so we got on there, bought that place in September 2020, didn't sell our house in Kelowna till September 2021. So I kind of had a year where I was going back and forth, working on the land. My kids would come and my wife would come with me every now and then, but mostly it was me. And then we sold our house in 2021, cashed out, got sold high, bought low, sold high, which was good. Never
it's
thought
amazing of, the real estate market there, how high it's been for so long.
It's ridiculous. I mean, what I bought my house to what I sold it for is about triple. I did put some money into it though. But that gave me a huge jump start in developing the property, and I've done a lot of the work. So the scamdemic was great. It was actually the most exhilarating and liberating time of my life. Now I experience that all the time without all the masks and stuff, but the energy stayed. And so I got into like hardcore guerrilla mindset with all of it. And I think all the bullshit of the New World Order at the same time was just toughing me up, preparing me for what's next. And it was when I look back at those 2 years, is probably two of the greatest years of my life. And one of my children was born during that time. I delivered both my children with my bare hands at home with my wife and a midwife. And it was a great time.
I'd like to interject.
Okay.
So to back up a little bit, you talked about studying law.
Yes.
I have studied law my entire life. I was raised by an anarchist. My dad was bringing me to John Birch Society meetings when
I
was
John
a little
Birch.
Kid.
Yeah.
I never got a social security number. My younger brothers never got birth certificates. I was born in 79. I think we're all about the same age.
Uh-huh. I'm 79, yeah.
And one thing with farmers in law, in the United States anyways, is where farmers get themselves in a lot of trouble, and actually a lot of people get themselves in trouble, is they step in what I call jurisdictional traps.
Sure, absolutely.
And the biggest jurisdictional trap that I'm recognizing for farmers is some kind of government subsubsidy.
Absolutely.
So there's Supreme Court rulings, I don't know, sometime in the 70s, you just search it, you'll find it, that like if you take a government subsidy, you essentially waive your right to due process of law.
You waive, and they can show up anytime they want.
Yep
absolutely.
I witnessed this firsthand with in Massachusetts in the 90s. I was a teenager, and one of our neighbors, a good friend of ours, was all excited about the Massachusetts Manure Management Program.
Sure.
And it was
for the NRCS grant for greenhouses.
For horse stables.
Uh-huh.
And they came in and they put this, you know, $100,000 manure collection thing for this guy's big horse stable. And about 2 years later, the Department of Revenue Agriculture, somebody comes in and they're like, oh, you got all these guys working for you for cash. A guy just literally shows up, starts walking around. How much money do you make here? How much are you getting paid? And you're not reporting. And they destroyed this guy.
Yeah.
He had a beautiful business.
Sure.
You know, boarding stable.
There's remedies for all that stuff.
Yes.
But yeah, if you don't understand what you're getting into, you get yourself into a trap.
Yes.
And they trapped everybody through like maritime law, and then they're getting people into their own essentially jurisdictional traps. It's not an area that I'm at.
Well, you know what I'll say to that is you can go down a rabbit hole in terms of maritime and all that. I don't suggest that. What I do now is I go right into the matrix with the shield of truth and the sword of equity. And I go right in and use their system. And so Canada's different than the US. Fundamentally, it's different because Canada is only a corporation on unceded territory. There was never a constitution established. There's a charter of rights, a corporate charter.
It was like Rupert's Land before that. I forgot. It was all Hudson's Bay Company originally.
Yeah. And so Canada's a neat place because it's actually anarchy. It's anarchy with the illusion of a corporation masquerading as a government that has very little force, not even like a 50th of the amount of physical force in the form of coercion comes from the state in Canada as it does in the US. It's not even measurable. And you all know that as Americans. But at the same time, so I see a benefit in Canada in that regard. There's less people. The migration thing isn't an issue for me at all.
Water everywhere.
We've got water everywhere. I like four seasons. There's a lot of benefits. Benefits in the U.S. is you do have a framework of the constitutional system. You have the de jure, which is the real system, which is the United States of America in title case, the combined states of the U.S. And then you have the United States, all caps, Washington, D.C., 1871 Act, which formed a corporation that everybody's registered in. So that's not necessarily the trap, but it's a confusion. But the beauty is about law is there's remedy in all of it. That what you have to understand are the details. And so what I say to people is Holy Bible, King James Bible, there's a reason there's a Bible in every court. God is in the fundamentals and the devil's in the details. And so God's law is fundamental principles that are easily understandable and everybody almost kind of gets them in a common sense way. But all Western law coming out of the Roman Empire, the Holy Roman Empire, created new system called equity. There's a long history of it and we could take days to explain it. But equity became the framework of Western law and it's somewhere between the Bible and the devil. And so what I say to people is if you want to live without rulers, you got to first learn the rules. So when you learn the rules, we're in the devil's realm, okay? That doesn't mean we're satanic. It doesn't mean we're devils, but we are in the devil's realm. He has the run of the show. God allows free will to be present. That's why the Bible has to be present. That's why we have to have free will. That's the deal. But if you want to be free, you have to do the work. You have to understand what you're dealing with. And some people don't like that. A lot of anarchists don't like that because they say, fuck the state. It's a coercive agency. I agree with all that. It's all true. But where a lot of anarchists fail short
it's
in
mind
is,
control.
They do. Well, but this is also a limiting belief that many anarchists create is that they sit there and say, oh, the state enforces these things arbitrarily. That's not correct. It's not correct. There's details in all of it. And so it's hard when people are discussing, say, situations. Oh, what about the Montana Freemen? Or what about these guys that tried this? It's like the devil's in the details, buddy. You got to look at the cases. And so it's hard to make comments when people make broad sweeping claims about, well, what about this? And I'm not talking about Freeman stuff. I'm talking right in the legal system. I'm the legal person, all of it. Take it all and own it and accept it and then use the rules because they are there. In law, in God's law, it's all simple and that's the law. The legal system is what's referred to as the color of law. It's like justice versus social justice. What do you need social justice for when you got justice?
And color literally means similar to or like. But among further examination, it isn't.
It isn't. It is not law. Law is the word of God. And there's more to that than the Bible, too. I'm not a Christian, though in the Western world, the Bible is the law. You go to the Muslim world, the Quran and those things are the law. Their laws are built on that stuff. And that's why a lot of those Jewish bankers had a hard time getting established in some of those Muslim countries, partly, you know, it's complicated. But so that's where I go is I go, okay, well, if I understand the foundational principles and I understand what it is and I live that and I know what I am and what I'm not, I can go in as an avatar into the system as a person, all caps name. I can go in, like I said, with a shield of truth and the sword of equity or whatever, however you want to spin them. And I can go in and use it, and I know that any statute has a remedy. Because equity are the foundational principles that law is based on. You look them up, they're called the maxims of equity. And one of the maxims of equity that the elite love, Klaus Schwab, all these cronies, they all use this stuff, is equity will not aid a volunteer. Meaning that if you volunteered and you took the shot, you're not in equity, you can't get remedy. That's you, that's on you. That's why they want to get you enticed to do all the stuff yourself.
Nobody forced you to.
Nobody did. I mean, there might have been some examples here and there, but those people who committed that crime are in violation of God's law, and they will be. There will be retribution.
Absolutely.
But all these cronies know this stuff. And so they want to get you to do it. They want to trick you through obfuscation. And the way they trick you in obfuscation from the with the law is they throw so many piles of books and words at you that you look at the pile and go, I could never understand this.
And they've manipulated many definitions.
They changed it.
I won't allow my children to use the word person when describing a man or woman, because a person is a corporation, association, or, you know, state, city, county, sure, or other legal fiction.
Yeah, that's right.
And I want to train them to know the difference so they don't have to relearn this stuff after their brain's been developed.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, for example, I unschool and do all that. My kids are on the land. My kids will say person, but they'll understand that there's a difference, because sometimes there's something to be said about common parlance and legalese. They are different things. And so if you can, it's just kind of like, it's just understanding where these things are, and it's all tools in the toolkit. I don't necessarily think that the legal system is the devil, but the devil has to play by God's rules. So there's remedy in the devil's system. I look at statute law as a Swiss cheese. There's so many holes in it that has to be that way, because God has to be present. There has to be free will. So if you're going to create color of law, you have to be able to access law.
And the devil is just Satan, which isn't it like the administrator, or
it's administrative process. I mean, in Canada, for example, you will not find. So we all think that we're under the Queen, or now the King, okay? And
wasn't she on their currency when she was like 9 years old?
Yeah, sure. Yes. But see, Canada is all a lie, because they never. You ever seen those Canadian politicians who get up and they do that little virtue signal where they go, "We want to acknowledge that we're on the unceded territory of the Silex and blah blah blah." It's a big virtue signal. It's the bang on truth. It's notice.
Unceded territory.
We are in British Columbia, especially. Most parts of Canada are unceded, and there was an act in Canada called the Indian Act, which is actually where the real gravy is as far as Canadian law. It really explains what's going on. But you will never find an article, mark my words, look it up, challenge me if you don't believe me, in Canadian law that claims ownership over any piece of land. All you'll find is a right to administer. So the state is an administrator, so it's either the Crown or whatever. Any corporations are all governments. Go on the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. You can put in Canada into company filings and see it right there. It's registered at Pennsylvania Avenue at the Canadian Embassy. But you can look at the quarterly reports of Canada Incorporated. They're all there.
And what did Elon Musk recently say? He's like, government is corporation on the limit.
Yeah, I don't know what he meant by in the limit. What is that?
He's probably right. Like a limited liability corporation. But one thing I can tell you, in the States, for example, I live in Henniker, New Hampshire. Well, I'll use Ware, New Hampshire as an example, which is just next to me.
It's called Ware.
Ware, yes. Okay. Ware, New Hampshire is actually where the Revolutionary War started, according to the locals. But anyways, Ware, New Hampshire is a municipal corporation.
Yeah.
The town of Ware calling it, a municipal corporation calling itself the town of Ware.
Yes.
And if you look in their corporate charter, which came sometime after 1923 under Uniform Commercial Code stuff, and like the town of Ware, the city of Keene, the city of Boston, the city of Palmer, Massachusetts, I've read all these charters, and they're basically the same boilerplate. They don't use the word government at all.
No.
In it. They use the word governmental.
Sure.
Because the suffix AL means similar to or like.
Yeah.
Now,
because it's a service corporation.
When asking... and so one thing I've done with like property things where they've come against me for, you know, code enforcement, property stuff, is I literally send them right to know requests or Freedom of Information Act request, asking them for the instrument that bears my signature where I agreed to be part of their private statutory code. And I also ask them to prove that they're a government.
Sure.
And so where in your own charter does it even say the word government? And yeah. I ask them for the definition of governmental. And as soon as they look up the word governmental, these town guys are like, we're not messing with you anymore.
Sure.
They just literally leave me alone.
Yeah, now. And that can work a lot of the time. Because the thing I tell people, too, is there's no downside in asking questions. You can't get in trouble for writing a letter.
Right.
And the advantage is, too, is that if you write the letter, and if they send a letter to you that had terms, the minute you write back to them, you reset the clock. So you can kick the can down the road for a very long time. Now, I don't like to get into remedies in short content like this. The main reason is that it lacks proper context. We can unpack a lot of these things, and we will. But it's risky to get into remedy publicly for a couple reasons. One is the information is extraordinarily powerful. It's liberating, it's empowering, it changes your life. Two, because it's so powerful, it can also fuck you up.
I always say it's just enough information to get you in a lot of trouble.
It is. And so it's like, but it's not like writing a letter to get in trouble, but you want to get into certain things. It's not that you get in trouble. It's kind of like, you know, have you ever heard the metaphor in law is that it's maritime and all that stuff. It's water. Definition of Canada is for greater certainty, : Canada in brackets includes the internal and territorial waters in and around the landmass known as Canada in brackets. When you have brackets, it means it's not there. So what are we talking about? We're talking about water. Why are we talking about water? There's so many metaphors to water in the law. It's fascinating. But one thing that water does to you, and you know this if you've ever surfed or if you've ever been on an ocean, is you can go out in the water, you can have some fun, you're playing around, tide comes in, can fucking pull you out fast. And that's what they'll do. They'll pull you out. So sometimes, and this is why I say to people, if you want to start doing this stuff, you really need to do the time and do the education and understand and start writing letters. Because that's the best way to learn is to get your feet wet. Just like farming, you know, you want to grow food, start growing food. Stop reading books, just go and grow food.
Fail your way up to the top. I mean,
that's right. Fail forward, you know, it's an upward spiral.
Or get consulted by someone like you so you don't have to fail many times.
And you can do that. I do that. I help people. But yeah, you want to know thy enemy. You know, a lot of this stuff comes down to like Sun Tzu and the Art of War. Is you go into an MMA fight, if you didn't do your research on your opponent, you're fucked. Every one of those top fighters knows exactly their opponent's strategy, their big moves. This is no different. And so know thy enemy, know thyself. Go in to battle with the shield of equity, the sword of truth. Go in, and I just go right into the matrix. And so, and there's different ways to do stuff. I'll tell you what, I've been on this path for, you know, 24 years. Law, I've been 10 years solid in law, paperwork, doing stuff. And I'm always learning. There's new things. And the thing that's really empowering about it is why I have no fear of the New World Order, is that there's so many solutions. Once you start digging, you're overwhelmed with solutions, and you and your biggest challenge is going to be deciding which one to start with.
Yeah, that's a huge thing you talked about in the beginning, rabbit holes, and I've literally have gone down all the rabbit holes.
Me too, man. They're dark.
Everything, it can get overwhelming, it can get distracting, it can get you in a lot of trouble.
Yep.
I must say, I've never spent more than, you know, 10 or 12 hours in a jail cell. Yep. I haven't had a driver's license in 20 years.
Uh-huh.
And
in the U.S., you guys can do that a lot easier with less problems than we can. People can do it in Canada, but you got to be prepared for a 3 to 6 hour conversation every time. Your kids are in the back fucking crying. Yep. And screaming. Your wife's pissed off at you. It's not worth it. I use the license. I use all this stuff, but sorry.
But going back to your definition of Canada, you know, the definition of United States, according to the IRS, includes.
Yes.
District of Columbia, territories and possessions.
Yes.
So New Hampshire is a sovereign country. It is not
every state
the United States. Yes. Yeah. All 50 states are sovereign countries. And they're recognized by The Hague and the UN.
Yes.
Even. And one important thing to understand about the word includes.
Yes.
And in almost every state statutory construction manual, which if you, before you even start studying like law, just read the statutory construction manual, because the statutes have to operate within the confines of that manual.
Absolutely.
And that is so powerful. And that really just put a lot of things together and made a lot of things make sense for me. I wish I had read that manual 10 years earlier than I did, because
yes,
it would have saved me a lot of
But
aggravation.
Includes is law 101.
Right. So
to understand the definition of includes.
Includes, according to the IRS, federal courts, all the lawyers, a whole bunch of stuff. Christopher Gronsky, a good friend of mine, he's here. He explains it very well. I hope I can give it some justice. But basically, when the term includes is in a definition, it means only what's stated in that definition.
That's right.
Because if there was something in that definition that was also included that wasn't there, it would say includes but not limited to.
That's
so
right.
That's like very
that's
important.
Right. That's what
to
they
understand.
Do in legalese. Yep.
Yes.
And so what I like to do in law is I go back to the maxims. So go back to the Latin root of the word. If you go into your Maxims of Equity book and you look up, the root of the word is inclusio. Inclusio says the inclusion of one is the exclusion of everything else.
Oh, that's excellent.
So wow. Inclusion is an inversion. So the social justice warriors are telling you, we need inclusion. No, no, no. They're saying we need exclusion.
Right.
It's an exclusive club being a social justice warrior. It's an exclusive club being an environmentalist or a feminist. Because if you're not on board with their ideology, you're not in the club. So includes is to exclude everything else. So it's like if I said to you, hey, we're having a dinner at my place tonight. Going to have a bunch of friends there. You're invited. And the dinner will include ice cream. In common parlance, you would assume there's a dinner plus ice cream, but I told you legally that there's only ice cream.
That's a great way to explain it.
And I've spent so many times going down pretty much every rabbit hole except for this one recently, so that's why I'm so honored to have both of you next to me who are just absolute ninjas in this. But you made a great point that, you know, this is just information to be very, very dangerous, and so you can't just go into this half-ass and try to pull any one of these maneuvers on a, you know, a police officer or something else if you don't know this and inside and out.
Sometimes doing it, you'll learn something. Yeah.
And there's a really good way to practice. So if you get like just a parking ticket, for example, and that's, you know, in worst case scenario, you got to pay a $10, $20 fine, whatever. It's not like you're going to jail or a speeding ticket.
Yes, civil
worst
matter,
case scenario,
nothing.
Your insurance goes up a little bit and you pay some money. And to, like I tell people, prepare for that parking ticket. Go sit in that courtroom.
Yeah.
Beforehand, just watch, observe, take some notes.
Absolutely, I did that.
Yeah, we did that. In fact, my father was facing 15 years in federal prison when I was a little boy, and he literally went and purposely got traffic tickets just to practice.
Great.
Because he basically realized that every single bar member that he interviewed was totally incompetent.
Yes.
And anyways.
Compartmentalized legal idiots is what I like to call them.
Absolutely. Yeah. They made all this money, but it was amazing. They could zip up their fly, and there was no way they could change a tire on a car.
No.
Pretty much all these guys. Yeah. And that being said, go watch in court. And if you get like a parking ticket or a traffic ticket, consider that an opportunity to practice. Don't just pay it. Don't just roll over. Actually go in and fight it, because it's a low risk situation. And even if you lose, the value in the situation is the fact that you went there and at least tried.
Yes.
So you'll never know what it's like to get a fastball thrown at you unless you go up there and strike out.
Well, and there's something to be said about standing in the court. That whole dog and pony show with the judge up on the two steps and all that, that's meant to intimidate you, right? And there's a bunch of weird symbology. You listen to Bill Cooper and again, Jordan Maxwell, and they'll take you down the rabbit hole, right? Frankly, if I were to educate somebody on this stuff now, I would say forget all those guys.
Yep.
Like, don't even go into esoteric stuff. Just go right into law. You want to learn about the law, read it. You don't like a mandate, read the mandate. Perfect case.
And a mandate's not a law.
A mandate's not a law. It's a corporate policy, right? And so we had the mask mandate in BC. It was 2 or 3 pages, you know. Didn't take a lot of work to read it. Article 4 right there, remedy, says... anybody can have a medical exemption. No need to explain, essentially. Remedy right there. So you can play a remedy game in many different ways. You can go at the straw man. Like I said, in the US, there's probably a few more possibilities. But because it's all color of law, it's all fake, there has to be a way back to God. And that's through the foundational principles.
Yeah, I recently went into a courtroom. It was actually the first time I've ever been in one. And they knew that I had a different type of strategy I was using than everybody else. And so they actually put my ex and I, who we had a agreement that we came together, we had everything worked out, no arguments, everything's peaceful, but we wanted to withdraw from the system and just have a private contract. And they ended up putting us in a courtroom where it was just me and her and the judge and nobody else. And like, this is kind of unusual that there's all these people in every other courtroom. And
then I've experienced that too.
And they segregated where they just put me in this separate room. And so I came armed with the printed off part of the Constitution that was making my case. And then I figured that they'd probably throw up an argument. So then I then printed off the Supreme Court rebuttal to that, where it actually shows, like, in plain English, exactly. So then as soon as the judge realized what I was doing, he basically was like, I'm going to give you like 99.9% of what you want to do. But if you want the full 100%, basically, you know, without swearing, here's basically, he's like, I'm going to absolutely F you up. And this is going to, I'm going to drag this out for, I'm going to make this super, super painful for you. We're not going to decide any of this today. But if you want to play that game, you know, go ahead. And maybe and he's like, you know what, you have a very interesting argument and you might be right. But, you know, that's not what we're going to do today. So I basically decided to kind of cut my loss. I'm like, I got like 99.99% of what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
It's not worth, you know, fighting another like 1,000 hours to get the other 0.01%. And so I just sort of had to take on the chin. But it's a real eye opener where it's like, okay, I wasn't quoting Alex Jones or Jordan Maxwell. I was quoting the Constitution in the actual and had it printed out. And then I had the Supreme Court case there, the whole thing printed out and then with the highlighted portion that was applicable to the scenario. And basically the judge is like, I don't care.
No, he doesn't. And the reason he doesn't care is because the Constitution doesn't exist in the court.
Well, especially if it's family court. Was that a divorce thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Family court's the worst.
Right.
Most guys I learned, or a lot of guys I learned from, got super deep during family court. But the reality is that the court system, if it's in the District of Columbia, you're not in the United States of America. You're in the United States. You're in the commercial world. The court is just, it's a basketball court. It's a game. It's all a racket. They bond the cases. It's all, the Justice Department in the United States probably makes more money than any institution.
About the money with family court, and if anybody wants to look more into this, there's a man to look up from Texas. His name is Jeff Younger. Internet search him. And he
should have called you before this happened.
Yeah, well, so anyways, what happens is under Social Security Administration Act Title IV, Section D, there is what's called financial incentives. They call it a matching financial incentive that is given to states. Specifically, 66% of this financial incentive is given to the judicial pension fund. All judicial officers. So this is prosecutors. This is all the courts in the state. This includes family court. All the attorneys at work, even the guy mopping the floor in the court, he's a member of the judicial pension fund, at least in New Hampshire. And under this Title 4D, 66% of what family court collects in child support is put right into the judicial pension fund. It comes out of the Social Security Administration. It makes every single judicial officer 100% in conflict of interest. And so this is, in New Hampshire, actually, we're the only voluntary legislature in the country. And we have no legislative pension fund, but so we're actually having family court and New Hampshire DCYF investigated. I've actually started an investigative committee against these guys, doing basically essentially a David Jose, and he's in Arizona, affidavit process. And we got because we have free staters in the legislature, we got a committee. We're having it's going to happen in June. And to investigate these guys, like this is the only one I can find that's ever actually happened, that it's going through. But the Social Security Administration is giving money to the judicial pension fund when child support is collected. And the purpose of child support arrangements and who pays and awards is not based on the benefit of the children or the family. It is in the statutory code for at least Texas. Jeff Younger talks about this. It is the purpose of the judges are instructed in family court to award who receives child support is to be based on the financial incentives in Title 4D. So this is why whoever makes the more money is almost always forced to pay the child support. And this is why they're in many every state. They take your driver's license if you don't pay. In many states, they take your professional license. If you're like an electrician or a contractor or something, they take that if you don't pay the child support, and they're so aggressive about it. And it doesn't get anywhere when people sue, when people go after them, because all the judges are complicit.
Yeah.
Because their pension fund benefits from it. I've actually paid some guys out of pocket to do research on this in New Hampshire. And they said that the judicial pension fund, and these are basically forensic accountants.
Yeah.
They said that a judicial pension fund in New Hampshire would totally collapse without the financial Social Security Title 4D money coming
into it. It's a big racket.
It's a massive racket.
Yeah, it's a big club and you ain't in it.
So this is why they won't let...
Yeah, in a court, on a tennis court, you've got a racket. So
yes, it's a racket. Yeah, the whole thing's a racket. The judges are in on it. And some of the best people you'll meet in law are retired judges who don't care about their bar license anymore, and they'll tell you all kinds of shit.
I've met two of them, and they've... Those guys have helped me out so much. When I say, hey, business, I told two judges, hey, And they're like, here's what's really going on. And I'm like, wow, thanks, man.
Isn't there something, too, with the flag where it has some sort of fringes? Is that something that's like...
Admiralty flag.
Yeah, yeah. But again,
don't get distracted.
It is. It's just a distraction. Okay. It's, like I said, I mean, and it's interesting talking to Jay here because, you know, the things are different, but we often do align, no matter what you're doing in the U.S., if it's constitutional-based or if it's UCC-based, Uniform Commercial Code, there's so much alignment in what we do in Canada because fundamentally Canada is a arm of the United States. Fundamentally, we're the hat of the US or the mullet, you know, whatever you want to pull it. Because we're registered in the United States Securities Exchange Commission, the corporation is an asset of that. It's all legal entities are all ways of hiding things, right? And the way the big boys do it is they go into trusts in the private side, and then they have special purpose vehicles in the form of corporations to navigate the territorial waters. So you got the castle on the private side on the land, and then you got the moat surrounding the castle, which is represents the water, and that's the defense. So you use the special purpose vehicle to navigate the public. And really, I mean, I tried for a long time to go out of the matrix, but then I realized that there's no point. It's the devil's playground we're in, and so the easier way to live through it is to just use the system. It just means some education, and it isn't that much. People get intimidated by law, and it's meant to intimidate you. Like the entire apparatus is meant to intimidate the hell out of you. The courts. The books, Black's Law of Fifth is this thick, you know, it's bigger than the Bible. And all this stuff is, the Uniform Commercial Code is like this thick. These books are so intimidating. But if you understand that Western law is based on equity, then if you understand those main principles of equity, then you can find the remedy anywhere. And that's what I would encourage people to go look up the maxims of equity. Go on Google and type in the 10 maxims of equity. And they'll take a while. You read them and like, well, what does that mean? You got to spend some time with them. But
let's not go on Google. We'll go on like pre-search or something else.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. No, literally for searching law, Google is actually quite fine. And maybe because it has to be.
And one of the first,
they can't hide that stuff.
First things people need to do is they need to put down a beer, get off the couch, shut off the TV.
Yeah.
The bread and circus that we have where everybody is just now we have the internet devices that have totally rewired all the children's brain. You know, everybody who's just old enough to vote now has pretty much been wired by the internet.
Yeah.
Especially if they grew up in where there's high speed internet in a city.
Yes.
And so I see that like there's so many people, I don't have time for that. But they watch every football game.
Yeah,
they
make
watch
time,
every
dude.
Basketball game.
Yeah.
And it's just, but they're, yeah, so that's,
see, I can't even relate to that. I mean, Canada doesn't even, that's not a thing, watching football, really. But I've just never been in that world. Yeah, people have their vices, you know. A lot of Canadians don't watch hockey anymore because they got woke. You know, people are just like, Canadians, for the most part, are salt of the earth. You get, in the media, you guys get caught up in the politics, and you get caught up in the rhetoric and the bullshit. Canadians aren't really that way. I mean, I'm a Canadian, but my people, as far as the United States go, are Southerners. I go down to Tennessee, Arkansas, those places, that's people
and
understand
lots of,
me.
Lots of great people. I was up there.
That's a very Canadian, very similar Canadian attitude in the rural places, you know.
And I'm from upstate New York, which is basically parallel to Southern Ontario.
Sure,
so
yeah, yeah.
My girlfriend's from Ontario, and so we went up there last week. We bought our plane ticket, I think, 2 days before all the wildfires. And then so we were up there during, I think it was like the end of June, beginning of July, and we traveled quite a bit. Like probably went 10 hours north of the border to like a, I forgot the exact areas, like Chapleau or something like that. But the weird part is, I didn't see any smoke or anything the entire time I was there. And I'm like, this is kind of weird that I got all these stories about wildfire, and I was up there like during one of the parts of this.
The ones that were in Quebec.
Okay.
They were blowing them into New York City.
Yeah.
Do you think that was intentional? Blowing it in New York City? Who's going to be the loudest people to complain about climate change and make a big stink about the impending apocalypse from weather?
We were in New Hampshire last year, and our blueberries didn't get sweet because they didn't get enough sun.
Yeah.
And like nobody's all the blueberries sucked from
New Hampshire. Yeah, because you were right downhill from the downstream from that smoke coming down.
There's a Free Talk Live episode, two or three of them, where I was hacking and coughing halfway through because we were just getting smoked out, you know, for weeks.
I've lived through it, man. I mean, I live in wildfire country. This is what the part of my resiliency strategy on my property has been, to have multiple sources of water, multiple storage vessels or containers or ponds or whatever you want to call it of water in a decentralized way. We have to, you know, the general theme of a lot of this, in my opinion, that a lot of anarchists and freedom-minded people need to take away is that the time for, like, in Canada we call it fucking the dog, the time for that is over. Like, if you don't own it now, you will go into the New World Order. And we are here in the New World Order. This, the New World Order is not that new.
The Old World Order, yes.
The old, no, we want to go back. God's law is the old world. The old world is what God created. That's where we will come back to. That's what this reset's all about. They want you to switch off while people are awakening. They want you fucking watching the Super Bowl and obsessing about celebrities and bullshit. And even going down rabbit holes. Because now there's so much truth out there that the New World Order can no longer hold it back. Like, the dam's broke. So now all they can do is divert the river slightly. So that's where you get the controls of opposition. That's where you get the penetration into the truth movement. And TikTok is a perfect example. You can go on and I hate TikTok. I cannot watch it. But I've seen enough of it to get it. It's short form, instant gratification. It's a slot machine, right?
Free dopamine hits.
Yeah, just and you look at the truther content on there. And it's not to discredit people who are I'm not having nothing against people who are posting on TikTok. Like, get your message out, whatever. However, if you want the truth, you're not going to get it on TikTok. Yeah. What you're going to get is a word salad of an infinite buffet of little kernels of things that sound cool, because they'll take the tidbits because they want the clickbait, right? They want the thing that's going to get the clicks and the views. They're completely guided by the algorithm. And you're just going to get so inundated with it and so much dopamine that you'll feel like you're on a quest for truth by just doing this.
You're not going to get it 15 seconds at a time.
No. I've been on this journey for 10 years. I'm not saying it's going to take 10 years. It doesn't. But if you come in with the right information and start going, you have to go for solutions. Never get that out of your head. As soon as you start looking at stuff and you're just getting hung up on how shitty things are, that's where they want you. Klaus Schwab.
Low vibration.
Klaus Schwab wants you in two ways, really. Let's call it a dichotomy to some degree. He wants liberals obsessing about gender and fucking all that nonsense, like pride. Pride's a sin, but also to celebrate pride is a celebration of nihilism, because it's celebrating nothing. You accomplish nothing to have a gender or a biological sex, whatever it is. That's nothing. On the right side, they want you going down the QAnon rabbit holes or getting wrapped up in the Trump election, thinking that Trump is going to solve your problem. He brought the shot.
Trump is the one who, if Hillary was in there, a lot of these Republicans,
they wouldn't have taken the shot.
Exactly.
That's so what I think.
So I think that either he's in on it, or they use his own psychological profile and hubris with all their 200 IQ level, basically psychopaths and psychologists, to goad him into doing exactly what they wanted to do anyway, while all of the opposition Republicans sat by and did nothing. And then everyone's like, oh, Fox News. Well, Fox News is owned by an atheist Australian liberal that donates to Hillary Clinton, but yet that's the big... and then now the new one's Tucker Carlson. I remember going...
How about that Kevin Spacey interview? How weird was that?
I didn't even
see it. Didn't that not
seem
some kind of notice? It kind of felt to me like notice. It was like, I'm showing you that I'm a performer, and this is a big fucking act. Because he hasn't come back with an explanation.
In 2015 and 2016, I was recruited by two different financial firms. And just by coincidence, Tucker Carlson was their keynote speaker. And he was up there with Paul Begalia doing their sort of like little crossfire thing. And he was convincing that audience of mainly like 55-year-old white Republican financial advisors, or, you know, really conservative audience. Tucker Carlson was out there trying to convince everyone that Hillary Clinton was quite moderate, not that bad, and it's not really going to be... a terrible time when she's up there. And this is me in person watching him up there. Now he's the new savior. And then the other big thing that got me is, as a guy who the first 2 months I was on trying to go like push back against this stuff in 2016, and I actually tried growing my page, I grew it to 32 or 33,000 people within 2 months. And then guess what? I have less people. I never got another new follower again since November 16th, 2016. But then I got optimistic because I saw this whole decentralization movement and how you could use things like, because I knew about Bitcoin early on, and unfortunately I didn't listen to you enough. But then you know, probably the first guy that ever talked about Bitcoin. But I know, I knew your ex-girlfriend, and I thought she was some crazy girl that just gave up her driver's license, and she couldn't articulate it, and I never met you. So that move cost me a lot of money not meeting you back then. But I remember hearing about, when I first heard Ernest Hancock interview Vitalik Buterin about Ethereum. I mean, he's a very hard guy to listen to, Ethereum. But then I remember understanding bits and nuggets of it, and I'm like, wait a minute. Like, you can do more with this and just trade like fake money back and forth. Like, you can have like information and data and use, you could build social media networks on there where they can't, you know, rug pull you, or they can't, you know, have the FBI come in and kick the door in and take all your stuff and memory hole you. And so I saw this big movement the past several years where a lot of different social media things were coming up that were decentralized, and it really sort of, you know, spreading the movement out. But ever since, you know, Elon starts buying X, then all of a sudden, that's the new thing, and now there's no talk about going this. And then the other big thing I was in, you know, with Elon that most people don't realize is because I was just getting into different ancient civilizations and all that sort of stuff, and I would go, oh wait a minute, I was reading a Wall Street Journal article and saw, oh wait, SpaceX is owned by Space Exploration Technology (SET) Corporation. So, and then Set in Egyptian mythology is the devil storm god who then killed Osiris, who then was brought back to life by Isis. And then, of course, they invert everything and make Isis the bad one, when Isis was the good, like, mother goddess, sort of like Adam and Eve. Like, she created, like, the first human, like, Atum. That's where I got, you know, Adam and Eve story. But even before that, it was, like, in the Enuma-ish, like, thousands of years. But I'm like, is it a coincidence that Elon Musk, you know, names it Set Corp? And then his name is Elon, E-L-L, like Elon, and Israel, because they were, and they were Israelites because they were acolytes of El.
Yeah.
And so it's just like all this different stuff that
it's
you're-
It's a bit of a rabbit hole. I will tell you though, having been down the rabbit hole for 24 years, is that things, I like to use universals. Like, as a permaculture guy, as a guy who does stuff on the land, I look at patterns in nature, and I try to use my own eyes to come to conclusions. One thing you could probably agree with me is that anytime you think you understand something, say it's like gossip amongst your family circle or your friend circle, and you heard about a situation with somebody, and you came to certain assumptions based on the information that was present to you at that time, but then you learned more and you realized there's more to the story. So wouldn't you agree that it's a universally accepted principle that there's always more than you can understand with the limited information you have? Yes. So I don't like to bother wasting time going down the rabbit holes of, is Trump and Elon part of the New World Order? Are they mavericks?
You're wasting time on a carousel of bullshit.
It gets you nowhere. And so all I will say is that, hey, life's complicated. Trump might have his own agenda in mind. Elon might have his own agenda in mind. He might be for the New World Order. He might not be. It doesn't matter. I'm rowing my boat. So I tell, row your own boat. You got to get up the river. You got to row your own boat. Nobody else is going to row it for you. And you have to go through those gates yourself. No one can take you. And so all of this stuff that we're in right now, I think it's a magical time. I'm having a great time.
I agree.
In life, I'm meeting people like you guys and everybody at this conference here. So switched on, so open to new paradigms, new ideas, and people don't get butthurt at anarchy, at least generally. People don't get fucking butthurt about somebody having a little different opinion about things. You know, I like that. But the point is that we have to step up now. It's our time as creators, as born of God, the creator. He wants us to create. And so you're not creating when you're flipping on TikTok. You're not creating when you're going to a political rally to support Trump. Like, you're not creating. Get your garden going. Get your water systems going. Get your knowledge going and apply that knowledge. Don't just be one of these people who think they know everything about the law, but you ask them how many letters to the state they've written. Zero.
I've gone basically the last 2 years almost creating no content, because what I was doing and creating was my land. Because, you know, oh great, I've got content, but, and I'm warning people about all these different problems. But then I starved to death because I was just doing nothing but bitching the whole time, not doing anything. Yeah. So that's why, and I also want to prove that you can do things on land that is less than desirable. So, I mean, my land, I mean, Jay hasn't seen it recently, but he was out there in the very beginning. And, you know, you need a jackhammer to do anything, because it's basically up against a mountain of solid granite.
Yeah.
And so what we've done is, you know, I find out, oh, there's a company website, chipdrop.com, and you can get mulch delivered for free from gardeners who just want to drop it off, and then that decomposes into soil. And so my neighbors were looking at me a year ago like I'm nuts, and now they're like, oh man, look at all the, they're like, why are you removing those rocks? Why are you doing this and that? And now a year later, like, damn,
it's
like,
green.
Look what you've done. And yeah. So it's like, you can do things, and a lot of, I mean, maybe can you kind of explain to people what permaculture is for those who don't know what it is, versus, because people are daunted by the idea of farming. It conjures up the idea of lots of work and things you have to do.
Well, first of all, if you're daunted by the work, you know, step up, fucking chef. Cupcake. Like, come on, like toughen up here. You know, Americans, stop the bullshit. Yeah, it's work. That's life. You want to get somewhere, it's work. You want to achieve things, great, it's work. Get over it.
I'd like to interject just a little bit on work, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So, kind of what I'm doing is I am putting my kids to work. My kids are 2 and 4, and they love to work. They want to feed the chickens. They want to collect the eggs.
Mm-hmm.
They want to feed the cows. They want to pull up grass, pull up the weeds, and put it in wagons in their Tonka trucks and go run it to the cows. And they want to. I got 5-year-old kids that come from the city to my homeschool co-op, and they're like, Farmer Jay, I want to clean pig poop. Can I clean the pig pen? And they're thirsty for it. So what we need to do with our future generations is we need to have them earn their dopamine hits before they're 6 years old doing work.
Yeah, get it.
So when they grow up, they will love to work.
That's it. I mean, Joel Salatin is a friend of mine. He says the Amish in his area, your punishment as a young man is you don't get to come to work.
Yes.
Right? Wow, I didn't know that.
That's the most harsh punishment.
In the Amish, I mean, if you misbehave in their culture, I mean, say we all about the Amish, I'm not Amish, but you know, there are some things that they do that are really special, and so the
work... Especially after 2020, it's like, man, it's not looking too bad.
The Amish got something going on. And so back to permaculture, the definition of permaculture is almost as nebulous as the definition of anarchy, especially when you get a bunch of anarchists together and a bunch of permaculturists together. You want to play this like circular game of telephone. But what I would say is permaculture is a design system based on observation of natural systems. And the foundation of the word comes from permanent culture. Bill Mollison came up with the word. I don't like to get hung up on words. I don't really think it's that important. I generally find the term regenerative agriculture a little bit more useful these days. But permaculture, people understand it because it's become a cultural phenomenon. And so that's really what it is. And so the way permaculture is applied on my homestead is it's a lot of front-end work to get the systems in place. And then once the systems are in place, there's so many redundancies that they can function in worst-case scenarios. So one example... In my water systems, when I first bought my property, it only had one source of water, and that was a 7-foot deep pit well in a culvert that was in a bit of a watershed that captures snow melt, and I could pump water from it for about 3 months in the spring and about 3 months in the fall, not in the summer, not in the winter. And so that was a start, but I go, okay, I liked on a property have minimum 2 water sources, so I had to create another water source, and since then I've done more. But the first thing I did was I kept that and used that. Still works. It's part of the system. I went and I drilled a well. And on a mountain, I got a 300-foot well. I get 10 GPM, which isn't a ton, but it's God's water. It gives us straight to the fissures of the earth, unaffected. Super hard water, but you drink it and the minerals are you just feel absolutely charged. So get another water source. Then I started adding other water containments. So I already had a 40,000 liter cistern there that came with the property. It was connected to this little pit well. So I drilled my well, put 16,000 liters of cisterns 100 feet above the hill. The well pumps to that. Gravity feeds down to the main irrigation system. Third thing I did is once I had the structures of all my homestead finished, I redirected all the rainwater. And that can go in multiple places. I can pump it to the ponds. I can pump it to a separate cistern. I can pump it into the house. So I need electricity to pump water from my deep well. So if I don't have electricity, where do I get water? Well, I can get it from my rainwater catchment that I can also divert well water to. So I can always have multiple containers on my property in a decentralized way holding water. So it's permaculture in a principle applied a bit more in a construction sense, a bit more utilitarian, but it's permaculture in the sense that in nature, there's always redundancies. Nature is not a monoculture. Nature doesn't like monocultures. That's why big ag needs chemicals and fertilizers to function, because it doesn't function in a natural environment. And so we start thinking about these things And what does nature do? Like, what happens out there when we're not here intervening, looking at that as a model, and then applying that into the micro or the macro? I'm a bit more of a macro guy sometimes, where I like principles, and so I try to apply things macro. And if you want to get into some really macro permaculture work, David Holmgren, who is the co-author of Permaculture, Bill Mollison was the details, the tome,
the micro,
the micro details, the big permaculture designer's manual that very few people have read through. But David Holmgren goes into principles, and I like that. I'm a principles guy, because then I can let my imagination and my experience guide me with principles, which is my same application in the law, is I like foundational principles, and then I don't need to know all the details because I'll find them when I need them.
No, that is fantastic. And I really spent about the first year just kind of observing the land, where the rainwater goes, even in the
winter,
even in the deserts.
Yes, it happens.
And because I'm at the base of a very large mountain, there's a lot more rain that I get relative to Phoenix, even though I'm not that far away. We get way more water than what traditional Phoenix would get. And whenever I'm out for a walk, I go and I take a look at all these natural, foliage that's growing in different areas and different washes, and no one's out there watering it.
Yeah.
You know, we're out there in the desert, and this stuff is, growing, and you see stuff, popping up through, basically the granite soil, and it's kind of a miracle. But, a big part of permaculture is, you're not out there going, once you have it set up, having to do a whole bunch of tending to the land. And another big thing is I used to do like Ironman triathlon stuff, so that involves a lot of work. And then I was, probably 15 years ago, like a gym rat, and see all these guys that go to the gym. Quit going to the fucking gym and just start working on your land and start doing real things. I've gotten, incredibly strong by just going out there with a jackhammer, doing real things.
Sure.
And then there's something to show for that, as opposed to I'm just going and, lifting up barbells and accomplishing absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a joke. Yeah, get on the homestead. Chop your firewood, do the work.
But this has been an absolutely great conversation. I didn't know where we're going to go with it when we first started. This is the great thing about Anarchapoco is that, you meet so many great like-minded people. I think I didn't discover you till a couple weeks ago. I've heard your name, and then I saw you on Band That Video, and then we didn't know we were going to be here until literally the day before we came here.
Wow.
But everyone creates their own luck. You create your own opportunity, and you just have to go out there and take it. But one more line of questioning is, what do you think, going back to the planet, what do you think is like the next sort of attack vector that they're going to use and that people need to kind of get their minds right ahead of?
As somebody who's been into it for 24 years, I don't try to say what the next thing is. One thing I can observe with my own eyes, and I'd put this as a challenge to the viewers and yourselves here, is that I've observed one thing with the New World Order and what they do, especially we saw this during COVID, is they like to do a thing where they throw a bunch of shit at the wall to see what sticks.
Hmm.
And the algorithms help them with that more than ever. When the propaganda machine was mostly the mainstream media, legacy media as we know it, they were limited in their scope because they had to run certain things, maybe had the limitation of channels, right? So, cable television had 20 channels, so they're limited to their message there. Now, they've got AI managing chat rooms and pretending to be people,
yep.
Bots, right? You don't know who you're talking to online anymore. So now the throw shit at the wall is so decentralized because they're learning from us. They're learning decentralization is pretty smart. It's something.
And
right?
With Elon buying Twitter, I mean, they can use all that language to train the AI.
Absolutely, and that's what's happening for sure. I don't worry about that though, because I think I'm not worried about an AI takeover because humans are so powerful with powerful manifestation and what we can channel. I have no fear of it whatsoever.
How come they can't figure out that checkmark box of like, click here if you're not a robot? I mean, you think that's like one of the first things to be able to figure
exactly.
out?
Exactly. I know. That's a good one. I like that. But what I will say is that they're going to keep throwing shit at the wall to see what sticks. And what sticks is going to be the thing that people really hunker down on. So I would say right now, people are really interested in that election with Trump, that's occupying a
selection.
Yeah, it is. It's a selection. But it's a selection so far is because if they selected them, but 80% of people voted one way, people wouldn't buy it. They need people to buy it. They need people to actually believe the illusion because they need you to participate. And so they need you to volunteer. And that's where that maxim of equity came in. That is that equity will not aid a volunteer. And so the New World Order needs willing participants. And now what I think post COVID, now what we have is the next level, which is the true believers. So familiar with the cults, think about, what was the big, the what was the Johnson, the what's the town Jim, now? Oh. Jamestown Massacre, where they all drank the
Jim Jones.
The Jim Jones, yeah. Jim Jones is, those are the true believers, right? So there was a bunch of people that came into the cult and lots of people left, but the true believers stuck around and drank the Kool-Aid. That's the next level of the New World Order, is the true believers. So true believers right now, we've seen them in Mexico. They're still wearing masks. They're true believers.
Taking vaccines.
Yeah, they're taking shots. I saw more masks in Mexico City Airport than Vancouver, BC. What? I was surprised by that, right? It was weird. But anyways, we're in the stage of the true believers now, because the stage has been set. There's lots of pieces on the puzzle, lots of pieces on the chessboard, and it's not about one. It's about a lot of things, and so it's what's going to stick and what are people going to take to. So I don't think it's a disease X thing, or I think it's going to be a lot of things, because they can now manage a lot of things. Before AI, at least as we understand it, we can witness, you can see, I've used ChatGPT, it's crazy. Right. If it's having a conversation with me and writing a book on request, it's doing that for millions of people at the same time. So it can manage all of us. We could all be living in this little box. So now the New World Order's plan will be a lot of things, because they can micromanage it technically, whereas they might not have been able to do that before. So I would say, don't get hung up on one thing. Look for the patterns, look for, and ultimately follow your heart and just get shit done.
Get your mind right and your spirit right.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the path to freedom comes in five parts. The first is mindset. Because if you don't have the mindset, you won't go anywhere. Stop watching football. Stop drinking all the time. Stop doing dumb shit that wastes your time on social media, all this stuff, arguing with people pointlessly. So get the mindset right, then seek the knowledge. The mindset leads to the knowledge. And then the knowledge is a journey in and of itself. Then get yourself on the, what's after knowledge, is get yourself into the place. So find yourself a better geography. So that could be moving to another country. Whatever is easier, the path of least resistance is the path of nature. Water moves the path of least resistance. We do the same thing, but it's all applied to your context. What do you need? What do you do? So get yourself into a better place, and then understand the politics you're in. And why am I missing my fifth one? Anyways, I have a video on that about the five. For some reason, I'm not thinking about the fifth. It's mindset, knowledge, place, politics. What the hell is my fifth one? Anyways.
And that's an off-grid with Curtis Stone.
I've got a video about that. But basically, that's where I'd go. And it is an inner journey. And people, the problem that people run into in every aspect of our world is what I call monomania, where we always think in terms of monoculture. And that's a New World Order trick, because if you look at the natural world, this is all God's creation here. This is man's creation here. That's all God's creation. It's in the devil's playground, but that's God's creation. In God's creation, there is never just one way. That's not the way nature works. And so don't think that people watch my YouTube videos and assume that I'm this rich guy. And I've done well for myself, I'll admit. But I've been at it for a long time. People who are new to my channel watch my stuff. They go, must be nice. I've been working this shit for 15 years. Solely focused on getting on the land and getting off grid and raising my family this way. This has been my mission for 15 years. So I didn't just show up. So don't compare yourself to me. Only compare yourself to who you were yesterday. And today is the only day that exists. So seize the day now. Get some shit done. Stop complaining. Just fucking make it happen. That's what I would say.
I'd like to add to prepping. So basically, where Tim is, I was essentially there 5 years ago. I bought a property 6 years ago. And I basically everything you said, I'm sort of doing. Rotational pasturing of, different species of livestock. But the one thing I want to add to it is what I think is going to be very, very crucial in a shit hit the fan situation, financial collapse, new world order, technotic takeover, whatever, is community.
Absolutely.
And yeah. So quite literally, I mean, everything's going to be, we could go another 20 years and it's still sort of where we're at now. When I was 6 years old at a John Birch Society meeting, there was a guy at the microphone who I had me convinced and everybody else that it was all happening in 6 months. Everything's going to melt down, the New World Order. This was 1986.
Yeah.
All hell's breaking loose. It's going to be
like a Jared Griffin. Jared Griffin talking about this in the 60s right. on video. Yeah.
And I was really disappointed that 6 months, I wrote it on my calendar. I'm like, hey, how come nothing happened? I was a little kid. And so What I'm doing is I put together a homeschool co-op where I have, I'm in New Hampshire. I went there for the Free State Project. So I have a whole bunch of, let's say, earthy, crunchy moms showing up one day a week with their kids. None of the kids are vaccinated. They're all homeschooled. And all these families are, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 children, and they're working together.
Yeah.
We hatched chickens.
Sure.
In the spring.
Yeah.
And this was from 6-month-old kids to 9-year-old kids. They hatched the chickens. We raised 100-some-odd meat birds. The kids all participated in cleaning the pens, dealing with the meat birds, building the fencing to graze the meat birds. They helped us with pest control. And pest control is, you know, a 9-year-old and a .22 rifle.
Just picking potato bugs off the...
We vacuum them up with a cordless vacuum. Yeah, right. That is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Most efficient way to do the potato bugs, cucumber bugs or whatever they were.
Yeah, yeah.
And then these kids come all summer long, and we all became like family. Very, very close. These kids work together doing all the chores, stacking hay, driving the tractors, just all the farm chores any farmer would do, from planting to harvesting to cultivating. You know, I got one garden's almost an acre. I got another garden that's about a quarter acre. So all these families took all produce home with them. They all shared in a bounty of meat. I had vegan moms cutting throats of chickens in the fall. And I was very proud of them.
Yeah.
And we butchered all our own chickens. Last year, we butchered hogs. This fall, I hope to do butchering a cow. So what's going on is fellowship was extremely important, was a huge element of essentially the colonists fighting the greatest army in the world during the American Revolution, was the fellowship and families. There's a war on families because families are so strong, and there is no way in hell a father and a mother are going to fight to the death to protect their families,
sure.
Especially the ones that are awake. So the example I'm trying to lead is if you have a piece of land, or if you're in a city living in a condo, like half of the people that come to my homeschool co-op, they're living in apartments or condos in the city, or you know, that kind of situation, and they're coming to my place, and the kids are earning the dopamine hits from being working on a farm. All these kids want to be a farmer, and it is pretty realistic. You can work a normal job and be a farmer. It's very realistic.
Do, yeah.
And these kids are learning fellowship. They're learning, amongst themselves. They're learning who can drag the hay, who can pick up the hay. They're learning who can swing the blunt tool, who uses the sharp tool. If an invading tribe comes, if it is Red Dawn in New Hampshire, because these guys have been working together for, you know, several years, you know, into the future, they're going to know who to give a long rifle to. They're going to know who's going to be a scout and go get into the actual fights. They're going to understand its fellowship. And that was another thing that, because like, you never want to get in a fight with an Amish man. I've watched it happen. I dealt with, I was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania for 10 years every Monday at a livestock auction. And I every now and then would see some arrogant Englishman pick a fight with an Amish guy. And the Amish guy, a little scrawny Amish guy, would just whoop the crap out of, you know, a guy who looked like he'd been in Gould's Gym every day. Because they're working the land. They're strong, they're resilient. So when these young kids get the dopamine hits, when they're before they're 6 years old, that is when the brain is being programmed. It is hardware that has open software with nothing on it, and they're getting that dopamine hit to work. And I think farming is the best thing, at least chickens is the easiest thing. These kids are going to chase that for the rest of their life. So when they're adults, they're going to be wanting to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and get out there on that land, because that's where the dopamine hits are going to chase.
Yeah.
And those are the kind of people who the girls are going to grow up to want to be nurturing mothers. The boys are going to grow up to want to be fathers.
And this is how we are.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, everything else has been bullshit. What you're talking about is actually the default position.
Right.
And I found in my journey, very, very similar to yours, my kids are on the land. My son is 4, my daughter is 7. My daughter is observing things. Oh, she says to me in mid-January, she said, "Dad, did you notice the black cottonwood trees are budding?" Yeah. And she said, "I think it's going to be in early spring." And my daughter's 7 years old. So this is in their intuition. They learn these things. But to go back to where I forgot my thing, the third thing is resources. So it's the mindset, which is part of the body too, the whole self, to get the knowledge, to accumulate the resources, to change the place, and to potentially change the politics. By politics, I just mean the political apparatus of where you are. That could be either moving to a political different jurisdiction, or it might be just learning about the jurisdiction you're in and executing these things. And so there's many different, so there's so many solutions out
there. And it's never been easier now with having guys like you and your information that's out there free for people to go view. You know, your information that you have, you know, tons of shows you've done on Free Talk Live, shows that I've done out there. I mean, there's tons and tons of information that's out there. And there's, and some people would come over to my land when it was in its raw form and be like, "Oh man, you got a ton of work to do." I'm like, "Well, you know, I've at least started, you know, the work." And now a year and a half later, it's basically 90% there, whereas yeah. Most people, you know what, and that was going through doing the work. But, you know, if you haven't even started, you know, you just got to have, you know, every, you know, journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And yes. So, you know what, you just got to keep, it all compounds in each other, and then you learn, you know, different ways to do things. Like, I'm learning how to, you know, grow food even hydroponically because I'm out in the desert, so I have different challenges.
Different context.
Versus people who,
you know, permaculture is all about context, right?
And yeah, we're doing, and I'm lucky that I had someone living on our land who was, you know, certified permaculture expert, and I had the person that did, actually Kanye West Permaculture Garden come out, and I consulted with him because part of it is if you pay some of these people a little bit of money to get the consultation, then that can save you either thousands of hours of your own labor or tens of thousands of dollars of mistakes you're going to make because, you know, they've already gone through the paces and know what to do. And so, you know what, you know, you can pay for that, but, you know, there's, but because we don't have the time, as much time right now. And so maybe we do, maybe it does drag on.
People have to make time because most North Americans are wasting a lot of time. And so I just don't see it as an excuse, but yeah, you got to do it. And the work is the journey. I mean, we're born into this world to do the work. And so do what you're supposed to do. That's why you came here. That's
leave
why
it a better place.
Yeah, leave it better than you found it. Make it happen. Don't lament about the work. If you're lamenting about the work, you're foundationally on the wrong track. Like this whole idea of wanting to work to retirement that's a trap. That's to compartmentalize the idea of work to make you hate the work so that you hate bettering yourself.
I love my work.
Of course, I love the work. I love all of it.
And I wake up every day and love doing all the different permaculture stuff, building up our land, and then also love, you know, researching now, like a lot of this like ancient civilization stuff and really, you know, diving into it, and it enthralls me, and I've got a passion for life and a passion for what I'm doing. And unfortunately, most people do not have that same passion because it's stuff that they have to do when they get to be able to do this.
And that's okay. I've made peace with people not waking up. I don't, it's not a numbers game. It's a quality over quantity game. And I don't care to wake people up anymore. I don't red pill people.
And we all try, all of us here in this room have tried. And so it's like if people don't, you know, haven't woken up, it's certainly not a lack of effort on any of our parts.
No, I mean, people, I'll inadvertently red pill people because they'll see my content out there. But, you know, do I sit at a dinner table with some distant relatives and try to explain to them the system? I don't fucking care.
I used to.
You want to take the shots? Go take the shots. That's your journey, and you'll reconcile for that at some point in your life. And that's maybe the path that God wanted you to go on. I'm of the belief that the New World Order is actually doing God's work by waking us all up. Like I said to you near the beginning of our conversation, you asked me what was the thing. I think it was the first question you asked me. It was like, where's the spiritual start? And to come back to that in a bookend, it was that I saw what the New World Order didn't want me to be. I saw that where they didn't want me to go, and that's where I want to go. And I'm going in the whole way. And so it's a journey. Enjoy the work. Get it done.
That's a powerful statement. And we'll have all the links to you down below. So it's Off Grid with Curtis Stone. Do you have a preference for people go and find you, whether it's
my website? If you're interested in the platform, we help people get on the land. We have a program called Homestead Accelerator, where we publish 10 to 15 listings a week in North America, basically where our members ask us to. But I've been consulting on real estate projects for a very long time. I'm really good at analyzing land. I use Google Earth. And so we find listings, and then we look for food, water, energy, shelter, and a property that can facilitate those things that are more or less turnkey homesteads. And we publish those listings, so people can go to freedomfarmers.com for that. And if you want to get on the land, I mean, you look at our listings, they're ready to go. Like that, and I do these 3 minute to 20, sometimes 20 minute screen share analysis of the property, showing you everything, where things are, how to think about the topography, where to think about the macro, pull the lens back 60 miles, look at what's around you, where are the risks, where are the threats, you know, how does this all work? And so that's a good resource if people want to get on the land and happen fast, because the time to buy real estate, the window is closing, and that's all by design, as you know.
And Jay, I know that you're really big into making sure the next generation is prepared and not filled with all these dopamine hits from you know, all these different devices. Do you have different lecturers that are out there, or so where would you like to direct people to learn more?
I have a website, jnoon.com. It is has not been updated in a little while. It's just a little thing on there about
Can you spell
Man
that
Camp.
For people in case?
Yes, that's jaynoone. .com.
I actually thought your last name was No One when I first met you. I told Ernie, I go, yeah, there's Jay No One. He's like, I don't know who that is. And then kind of find out, like, oh, Jay Noon. So, and yeah. I'm Tip Cho. So I really appreciate, you know, having both of these experts here. And thank you guys for your time. And you know what? You got to put in the work. And there's never been a better time than yesterday. So today is the next best time. And thank you from Anacapoco 2024.